This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
You're on Joy 94.9. It is Sunday Arts Magazine. Of course, that was Pink Martini. And as you said in while the song was playing, Brendan, that we've actually played a Pink Martini before, but it was off a different album. This is an album from, it's called Hang On Little Tomato.
Oh.
It's a very, very funny track about a tomato on a vine. It's really quite fun. A great band. Amazing live. They're about an 8 or 10 piece band. Depends on how many when they tour, and they pack out Hamer Hall every time they tour. A great calypso-y sort of sound, but very much bringing back the yester era, but with amazing songwriting skills. They're clever people.
Got me swaying away.
It's good stuff. Now we're going to visual arts.
Yeah,
and last night,
great place to start. Really,
great place to start. Absolutely. And last night was the winner was announced of the Men on Men art competition at the Laird Hotel. Now, this has been running for a few years now, and it's a very popular exhibition. And I was lucky enough to be asked to be one of the judges on this. And so I went down there just over a week ago, and I've had to bite my tongue and not say anything about who won. Great little exhibition. The quality and how many pieces are in it. Something like 40 odd pieces are in this exhibition, and it's all through the hotel. And it was pretty hard to actually choose. But the minute I saw this one, I thought, there's going to have to be something a lot better to beat this one. And there wasn't. And the other judges agreed with me. We weren't there at the same time. We're all there at a different time, which is good. So we weren't influenced.
Yes.
Now, the winner of this exhibition wins a money prize, but also they exhibit their about 10 or 20 pieces during Midsummer Festival.
What a great prize.
It's a wonderful prize. And we have the winner here with us today. And Andrew, welcome.
Oh, yep, I'm here. Thanks for having me, David.
Absolutely our pleasure. And congratulations on winning.
Oh, thanks again. Yeah, I'm really excited and actually still can't believe it. But I'm here on the radio, so yeah, I guess it's true.
So last night you were told you had won it. I was announced on stage, and everyone was there, that all the other people that would have painted and stuff. What was the feeling like getting up there in front of all that crowd and winning this prize?
Well, I actually knew before the announcement that I won, but it was kind of humbling, but also a bit. It was a bit scary because, yeah, you're going on stage and you're the winner out of all these people, and you're kind of blessed to know that your work was apparently the best one. So
yeah.
It was also a great experience because of that too.
Now tell us a little bit about your topic. What's it called?
The picture's called Guys, because honestly, I couldn't think of a better title. I was going to call it something like Guys Night Out, but when I was colouring it, the sky, I was like, it looks better, not dark. So I couldn't call it Guys Night Out anymore. So I just stuck with Guys by itself.
So what it is a group of guys.
Yeah.
And what age group? I'm thinking early 20s to mid to late 30s.
Yeah, pretty much. Between 20 to 40, a mixed group of just different bunch of guys out in the town, walking down the street, yeah, having fun, just being casual.
Yeah. And now it looks as if they could be, going from one pub to another and they're all friends, but they've all got a little bit of a different look about them. So they're not all very stereotyped. As you said, you didn't want to make it the atypical gay man. They're all got their own particular style and look, haven't they?
That's what I tried to achieve. Because I'm also into, I guess, fashion, street fashion as well. So also, apart from depicting different personalities, body types, also just express that through what they were wearing and their body language as well. So,
right.
Yeah, create a bit of an eclectic sense of, personality throughout the scene.
So, Brendan, you've got a good question you want to ask.
Yeah, well, we were sort of curious, I suppose, about the how you basically created it. Was it, hand-drawn, or was there a digital element to it?
Oh, a bit of both. With most of my drawings, I start the traditional manner, usually with a pencil, sketch out the concept and then refine it with fine liner and then with markers and watercolor. And then there's also a bit of digital work as well with applying textures, digital enhancements and just things like that to kind of create that finalized look for the picture.
The one thing that stood out to me was the sheer fact that I could tell that you actually did draw it and the colour was real colour instead of being digitally enhanced, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's nice to get that organic feel about it. But also the fact of it's very now. The look of it is really hip. It's really, you've picked the essence of right this very moment. Did you deliberately do that or is that your style?
I guess I didn't kind of think consciously to make it modern or hip or cool, but I have worked in retail fashion before, and when I buy clothes myself, I kind of pay attention to what I think is cool, in my opinion, and then usually apply that through my characters and what they might wear, and it comes across, I guess, through their fashion sense, that sense of youth street culture.
So talking about working in the fashion area before, what's your background?
I'm a graphic designer, illustrator. I've worked in retail fashion before, but I've also worked as a designer in-house for clothing brands. So, I've done stuff like T-shirt graphics and also just character design where I get to give characters outfits and, hair and makeup, stuff like that.
Right.
Now, if someone was to look at this particular picture that you've won this for, you know, do you think it does represent your style completely, or is there a completely other side to you as well?
Oh, do you mean artistically?
Artistically, yeah.
I think it does represent a strong aspect in terms of what I normally do. But, yeah, every time, every day I do experiment and try to do different things, whether it works or not. You know, I think that's kind of the fun of it, just seeing what you end up with, playing around.
So this exhibition you'll be doing in January next year, is it going to take on that form or haven't you thought that far ahead yet?
I don't think I have thought that far ahead because I did get an email just today from Brett, the bar owner, saying, yeah, we'll have the exhibition in January. And then I didn't realise...
Right, that was part of your prize was the exhibition.
Because what the application form said was... you'll have your work exhibited for midsummer. And I just thought he meant that one picture I did, now. I didn't realise he meant a whole bunch of new pictures. So right. I have to now think about what I want to do for that.
Right. And do you think you'll take that route? Because I could almost see that you could pinpoint particular people from it. Like, this is my mind running wild here. And, the two guys, one's being piggybacked by another, the central characters, and they could be in a situation in a bar, up against a wall or chatting with each other or, I could see that you could actually take different people out of the exhibition and do a scene from all those people. Have I given you an idea there?
That actually is a good idea. It didn't occur to me yet, but I do... I do a bit of comic work just for myself on the side, and it is fun creating characters for yourself and giving them a bit of a life and a bit of a story. And just the way you described how I could have those two characters in another setting, it's almost advancing from what I already had and developing their own life from that one picture.
Yeah.
So that'd be kind of cool, I reckon.
Can I just ask you one thing? Basically, with your art, are you able to, or is the goal to support yourself through your art? And how hard is it to be an artist?
That's a tough question because there's different, I guess, avenues you can go down. Because I'm a graphic designer, which is not the same as what I'd be doing. It wouldn't be me doing all those, characters and those illustrations every day. But then you can kind of find ways to balance what you like. Exploring different paths, and because I find a lot of artists that do strictly one style, they kind of have to work really hard to establish that what they're doing is worth it. So for me personally, I'm just balancing doing a bit of graphic design and also illustration stuff as a kind of a part-time thing as well. So
can you see yourself down, this is as you were saying before we came on air, that you wanted to experiment with your art and get that whole thing rolling and go into exhibitions and hopefully win something, and you already have. So you are looking at taking that journey of becoming an artist per se.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. I think a lot of it is just getting it out there, because that's one of the things that's the next step in a way, because you might have the skills or you might have stuff that is great, but then it's just a matter of letting the right people see it. And then from then on, like having an exhibition, you know, you get opportunities developing from that. And yeah, it's kind of a stepping stone from then on.
Right. Congratulations again, and we can't wait to see what your exhibition ends up like.
Yes.
It will be really good. So you must come back when Midsummer's on, and we'll chat to you again. But in the meantime, you can go to the LEDS website, which is ledhotel.com. Your piece isn't up yet, because this exhibition's not up yet, because it was only announced last night. Knowing Brett, will be up within the next day or so. So give it maybe until tomorrow and then check it out, because it's a great piece. It's going to be hung there for a little bit longer at the exhibition, is it?
Yeah, I think till the end of June, or maybe a few days before the end of June. But
right,
yeah.
Okay. So if you're going down to the LED, check it out, because it was part of an open day last week where people could, which was open to the girls as well. But if you didn't get down there and you want to check it out, go to the LED's website in the next couple of days. Andrew, congratulations again, and can't wait to see what
you
do
again.
Next. Yeah. Our pleasure. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
You're on Joy 94.9. This is Sunday Arts Magazine with Brendan Bale and David Hunt.
That's us.
That's us.
Oh, that was very relaxing.
It was,
that
wasn't
was gorgeous.
It?
Gorgeous.
He is really big overseas and hardly known here. He's a Melbourneian, but lives most of the time, you know, that whole Cuban sound that he has. His name is Adam Dunning, which is a very odd name, and the album's called Glass Bottom Boat. And the album cover is fantastic, because artwork is brilliant. He's in a suit and tie, and he's submerged in water, and it's really cool little album. And he's a lovely guy, and as I said, very big overseas. And most people think he's actually from somewhere in America, because he tours around and is known over there and unknown here in Australia. There you go.
Now,
what have we got next?
Well, we're going to get into an interview, actually. The lovely Sonna Hamer has given us an interview she did with director Jennifer Kent. Now, mm-hmm. we had talked about her film a few weeks ago, The Babadook.
Yep.
And I had been very excited, firstly, before I saw it, and probably even more so after I'd seen it, because I loved it. You know, but once again, it's another South Australian-made film. They're taking over Australia,
which is not such a bad thing. But
I
as I said before, they were the ones that got it all rolling in the 70s, late 60s, early 70s. The state government there put a lot of money into film, and it was called the South Australian Film Corp. I'm not sure if it's called that now. And they did Picnic at Hanging Rock was theirs, and quite a few others as well.
Yeah, so there is that legacy of great films being made by, you know, in South Australia, not necessarily by South Australians,
no.
You know, but they're basically making the rest of the industry come to them. They're dictating the terms, which is amazing.
Okay,
so yeah, it's a shout out to a challenge to the rest of Australia. Keep up.
Where'd you get this?
On the shelf.
If it's in a word or it's in a look, you can't get rid of the Babadook. A rumbling sound, then three sharp knocks.
Ba-ba-ba-duk, duk, duk.
That's when you'll know he's around. You'll see him if you look. Nothing bad's gonna happen, Sam.
Welcome, Jennifer Kent.
Thank you. Thanks, Sonia.
Yes, and of course the director, writer too, I believe, of The Babadook.
Yes, that's me.
Tell us about The Babadook.
Well, the Babadook is a strange creature. We're talking about it today. You know, someone said, I didn't know the Babadook was born in Adelaide. And I said, yes, in the Glenside Mental Hospital, which is where the Adelaide studios are. So, that was where its life started. We shot in Adelaide, and it's been a really tough film to get made on a low budget, because we had such high, you know, visual ambitions for it. It's quite a heightened world. But we had a team of extraordinary creatives and technicians who've brought this film to life. And we're really prized and thrilled, first by its overseas success,
Now, it's been described by The Hollywood Reporter earlier this year at the Sundance Festival 2014 as cleverly playing off the classic fear of monsters lurking under the bed at night and the spookiness of certain children's picture books. The Babadook is a distinctive domestic horror story in which the unresolved traumas of a conflicted mother and son are physicalised as a malevolent entity that threatens to consume them.
Right, that's pretty cool.
That's great.
That's quite, I mean, you know, one thing about the American journalists, which really, maybe I didn't give them credit, but the reviews I read, they were really delving into the depths of the film in terms of the deeper themes of it. That was such a joy for me to see because I wrote it to be a deeper film, you know, not just to be about shock scares. It's been embraced on a deeper level by the critics there so far.
Yeah.
You know, we've had audiences very moved by the film. I think especially women, you know, and mothers of young children, I think will really relate to this film because it goes into who I know who's a mother feels like a bad mother. No one comes up and says, I'm a great mother, that the Babadook taps into what it means to be a mother and how hard it is and how isolating it can be, and also touches on a few taboos around mother love.
Yes.
And how it's not just a given that we love our children. It sometimes is hard work.
Yes, I love the way, without spoiling it too much, the way you've worked in an absent father and the way you have done that. It was interesting being in the premiere and the crowd and the audience and hearing mainly males laughing, actually.
Yeah.
And not the females. And I was thinking, oh, this is, you know, we've all experienced those moments, I think, when mother love can go a bit the other end of the spectrum.
You know,
not to the extremes, I'm saying, but some people have experienced that.
Thing, you know, I wondered if I'd get some criticism for playing motherhood not in its best light. But what I'm realising is that mothers relate to it and feel relieved to see that on the screen. And as you say, you know, it's not that women are going to those depths in most cases, but it's a part of the female psyche to have this thing of, oh my God, it's so hard to be a mother. Mm. And I think that the men are laughing mainly out of nervousness, actually.
I think you're right there.
Because they think, oh, is this going on? I don't know if I want to acknowledge this. I think I said last night that laughter and fear, it's a very fine line between them. So I don't see laughing in a film like that as a bad thing.
No, you're right. It's interesting how, I guess, people, as you say, respond and react to something that might be more personal than they're willing to, you know, willing to accept.
It's confronting to see those things played out in a story, I think. And it very rarely happens, which is why I'm so proud of the film.
Quickly, how did you find Noah Wiseman? I mean, incredible little boy.
Oh, he's a real find. And I mean, I owe that to Nikki Barrett, our casting agent, who was just relentless in her search for the perfect boy. Six at the time we shot. That's very young. And
yes,
6 years on the planet. You know, there's a lot. It's a tough call for me as a director to rein in his brilliance, but there, it was there. And so, you know, that was a joy ultimately to work with because he was innately brilliant and he had a great empathy for others and he was able to imagine so beautifully and he was able to put himself into the shoes of that little boy who was so traumatized. In terms of where we're headed next, I mean, there's no sequel, there's no merchandising, but I'm really fascinated by the book and we are floating the idea of creating a book that sits independently of the film, tying that in with our US release.
Horror films. Was there anything that in particular out there that influenced The Babadook or gave you...
Oh, my God, so many.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a genuine lover of cinema and a lover of horror cinema. I never have looked down on it. I've always seen it as an art form, you know. There's crappy versions of that art form, sure.
Yeah.
There's crappy dramas and, you know, romantic comedies and comedies out there as well. Why should horror just get such a bad name? You know, obviously, the Polanski domestic horrors, I'm a big fan.
Repulsion,
yes. Yeah, Repulsion, Rosemary's Baby, The Tenant. I love David Lynch. You know, I see horror in a very wide, I see it in a very wide form. I've been offered to Hollywood films, which I turned down, which I didn't want to make remakes of wonderful films and other things.
Fair enough.
With numbers at the end of them. So, you know, there's lots of exciting things. HBO, some promises there and some other stuff as well. I'm writing my own scripts. I've got two, one set in Brisbane and the other one set in Tasmania in the 1820s. And it's a revenge tragedy. That's the one I'm leaping into now.
Jennifer, look, thank you so much for speaking to us about The Babadook.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Oh, yes, that's the amazing Mr. Paul Capsis on Joy 94.9 on Sunday Arts Magazine. Brendan, I love this guy. He's such a wonderful talent and so multi-talented. Apart from being the most incredible singer, he's a really good actor as well.
And he's fast becoming a bit of an Aussie icon. You know, he's been around for a while and, you know, hopefully everyone knows a little bit about him.
Yeah, really. Well, he's also writing a writer as well, writing a lot of his own material these days. And really interesting, I was lucky enough to interview him when he just finished writing a piece about his grandmother. And who he was going to play her, and got rave reviews. And he's often in town. He's a Sydneyite, but he's often in town because he does so much work here in Melbourne. I believe he's in Adelaide at present, which would probably be part of the Cabaret Festival in Adelaide. It's amazing talent.
And I was telling you earlier that one of my first sort of gay films that I watched was Head On, which he was one of the stars of that as well with Alex Dimitriadis.
Right, yeah. Well, do you call that a gay film?
Yeah. Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely, I would.
Because Alex wasn't gay in it, was he?
Well, he had sex with men, so...
Oh, did he? Oh, yes. You see, I've obviously forgotten what that film was like. But I think Paul Capps has actually played a cross-dresser in it, didn't he?
He certainly did, yes.
Which again, you know, suits him down to a T. Because he channels a lot of female voices, which I've been to one of his concerts when he's done that. Absolutely amazing. Mm. Incredible. So now, talking about incredible people and somebody that's a little bit of a legend in her own lunchbox, who have we got now?
We've got Kirsten von Biebra. We're delighted to have the director of Grounded here on Joy 94.9.
Hello.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Now, you're part of Red Stitch, which is an amazing collective of artists, isn't it?
They are. They're wonderful. In fact, I'm a guest director that's come in to direct with them for the very first time.
Yep.
But I'm a great fan of their work and have been coming to this theatre for many years to see their and review their production.
Now,
what's so great about them is that they are a collection of an ensemble of actors. And so it's a theatre that's run by actors for actors, which I think it's great that they have their own autonomy and deciding, you know, claiming what parts they want to play. And get to look at the sort of character arcs that they want to, you know, have a go at. And you don't always get that choice when you're going for auditions and people look at you and sometimes you just get typecast.
Absolutely. Now, you actually mentioned to review some of their productions because you're head of the Green Room Awards, is that right?
That is correct. You've done your research.
Just explain what the Green Room Awards are for those that don't know.
Well, the Green Rooms are a humble little organisation. It's like a mini version of the Academy Awards in that we're a collection of about seven panels, one for each art form, like cabaret, music theatre, dance, mainstream theatre, alternative and hybrid performance work, opera. And it's a peer group assessment review organisation where they spend a year reviewing all the opera or all the mainstream theatre. And at the end of the year, we all sit down in our respective panels and thrash it out as to who we think was the best male performer or best production or best lighting design. And then we actually have an awards ceremony, which was held earlier this year at the Comedy Theatre.
Excellent. Now, tell us a little bit about this current play that you're directing.
Yeah, it's an exquisite play. It's a contemporary piece written by an American playwright called George Brand.
Now, the one thing I love about Red Stitch is the fact that they pick really interesting plays, don't they?
They do, and this is a really hot play at the moment. This is the 10th production in the world in the last 10 months.
Wow.
It's won 3 awards. It won the Smith Award in America for Best New Political Play in 2012, and it won Best Top 10 Plays in London, voted by The Guardian and the London Evening News. And it's about to tour Europe, and there's a whole lot of productions coming up, popping around the world. I think it's really about a topical issue. It charts the story of a female fighter pilot who is ripped from the sky, and when she finds out she's pregnant, and when she returns to the military, the Air Force, the whole face of the military has changed due to drone warfare. And the idea came about when the writer saw an article in a journal which said that under Obama, in his first 3 months, there were double the amount of drone strikes compared to the previous 8 years under George W. Bush. So a lot of people have picked up this topic. It's a very hot topical issue of the day in terms of the morality of drone warfare, the inequity, in the nature of the battle, because people who operate the drones sit in their home country, you know, thousands of miles away from the battlefield, and there's no risk or danger to their lives. So I think at the heart of the play, there is this issue of moral injury, you know, like you are killing people and it's not a fair fight. So, it's very topical.
Wow. That sounds pretty intense and pretty amazing.
So yeah, it is. And it's just the most amazingly written play. It's just this exquisite combination of really topical issues combined with extraordinary word craft. It's written like verse, but it sounds like a sort of stream of consciousness play. It's written with short poetic lines, and then sometimes that all start with capital letters, and then when it gets more emotional, it breaks into run-on lines. There's virtually no punctuation in the piece, which sort of means we have to decide the breath of the actor and how the ideas connect to breath. And it's got references to lots of popular culture as well as classical references as well.
Right. Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so it's beautiful.
It's called Grounded, and it's by Red Stitch.
Yes.
And when does it open?
It opened 2 nights ago, Friday the 13th.
Oh, that's right.
Very
yes.
Well.
Yes.
Standing ovation, so we were very pleased about that. And it runs until Saturday the 12th of July, so it's got a good 4 weeks to come.
And awesome. how can people find out more about the play, Kirsten?
I think if they go to the Red Stitch website, if you just Google Red Stitch Theatre, and there's lots of information there about the play and about the playwright.
And they're very central. They're just in Chapel Street, aren't they?
Yeah, it's really convenient to get to. There's trains and trams, and there's a car park out the back. And if you know the Astor Cinema,
yep,
on the corner of Chapel Street and Dandenong Road, it's just opposite the Astor Cinema behind the church there.
Excellent. Thank you so much for chatting with us. And
I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. It's a beautiful play.
Excellent. And keep up the good work with the Green Room Awards.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye.
All right, all the best. Bye.
Bye. Ah, oh, there you go. You're on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You're on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine, and that was Eros Ramazzotti, Italian heartthrob.
Ooh,
been around for
hunky.
Years. He's a very good-looking man, isn't he?
Mm.
He's been on the scene probably 15 years or maybe even more, and huge, and tours Australia and sells out without a doubt. You know, like I've seen one of his shows. It was quite a few years ago now, but really, really cool. And backing vocals on that was Ricky Martin.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go.
Fantastic.
It's, yeah, interesting stuff. There's such a great world of music out there. It's I just love it every day.
And I'm sure, it's great to share it.
Mm.
That's our you know, opportunity to do today.
Excellent.
Now, someone that hopefully is enjoying themselves out there is Tim's from Elwood, who has just come through that they've renewed their membership.
Yay, thank you.
Thank you, Tim's, if you are listening right now. That's amazing.
Yeah, and if you want to say hello to us, because we haven't mentioned it once, you can SMS us on 0427JOY949.
Or on air at joy.org.au. That's the email, of course.
Now, what's next?
And,
film segment.
Film review, yeah. So we may as well squeeze that in. Now, I went to see The Rover from... we've been talking about it a little bit because it's basically been getting a lot of coverage from Cannes, and it's just rolling with it. From David McShod, his second one after Animal Kingdom. Now, I really liked it, but I'll give you a little bit of an overview. It's 10 years after a global collapse, a global economic collapse, I should say.
Hold on. Aren't all the films about this a present? Well, so many of them are, aren't they?
Well, might be to do with the conservative governments in power. collapse, and from people from many different races have moved to Australia, and the American dollar is the most common currency.
Interesting.
Yes. Now, I won't go too much further into it, but basically it concerns Guy Pearce. He kind of gets involved in, basically there's a botched robbery and his car gets stolen, and yes, there's something mysterious going on because he's very attached to the car, so that might come into it later.
What a great actor he is.
He
and
really is.
Such a versatile actor.
Yes.
I saw him being reviewed with this film, and he says, you know, not a lot of roles come his way.
Mm.
He gets the odd blockbuster every now and then. I think he hasn't played the Hollywood game as much. He likes living here in Melbourne. He follows Geelong. He likes going to the footy. And that's what makes him such an interesting character and a versatile actor, because he is so good at it. And the shots I've seen from it, you look at it and you go, it's almost not him.
No.
He's transformed himself.
And the interesting thing is, there isn't a huge amount of dialogue in the film. It's mostly, well, not mostly, but there are a lot of shots of just him and his emotions coming through his face. Honestly, I don't know how he does it, but you can feel it.
He's physically a bloody good actor, especially considering that he was from Neighbours around the same time as Kylie and Jason. And he's just gone on. And, of course, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, he was just...
I was going to mention that.
Brilliant. Oh, sorry.
No. I was just going to say, it's a big step from Felicia to playing Eric in this film.
Somebody else fairly famous is in, very famous is in this film.
Yes, and Robert Pattinson from Twilight fame. And I guess it's a little bit like we were talking about last week with Scarlett Johansson, you know, these people that are in these big budget Hollywood smashes, but then they choose to do these littler films where they might not be making so much money, but they get to, you know, hone their craft.
Well, I think with him, he would have made a lot of money out of that franchise.
Yes.
And he was never comfortable, was he,
in that
spotlight? And so I think he's deliberately taking a lot of these roles, because he did do a few pretty big ones there, you know, a little way
and
back.
And if you remember back, so this film was probably started around 2 years ago,
right?
A year and a half ago, and it was after he'd broken up with Kristen Stewart from the Twilight franchise.
Okay. So he ran as far as he could away.
Well, that was the speculation that, you know, what a great, you know, chance to get away and clear his mind and make a great film in the same, you know, time.
Yeah.
Because
the first time I ever saw him was in one of the Harry Potter films.
Ah, of course. Yes.
And of course, it was a natural progression for him to move into that. You know, it was very smart of the film people to actually put him in the Twilight sagas, because, you know, he had that sort of look and that whole feeling about him, didn't he?
Yeah. But it's interesting. He actually plays an American in this. So he's a British guy in real life playing an American in an Australian film.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess, the world cinema for you.
Exactly. And so many Australians and English are in American stuff these days, aren't they? In both television and film. And you just never know anymore.
Don't. And that's, I guess, you know, the test of a great actor, if you can't tell.
Absolutely. So how many bananas?
I'll give it,
we actually haven't decided
what we're going to.
You know, like stars or popcorns.
I've been saying stars, but maybe, you know.
You're going to have to come up with something.
Yeah, we'll get back to you, dear listeners, about that one. But 4 out of 5.
Oh, okay.
I'll give it. It's a strong film. I didn't like it as much as Animal Kingdom, but it has a lot going on, and it's not just a typical, you know, dystopian kind of film. There is a little bit more going on. And to be honest, it's probably kind of an extreme version of even what's going on in Australia at this point. You know, an exaggerated version of it.
Okay.
You know, dog-eat-dog kind of world.
Yeah.
But just set in the outback rather than in the city.
I think the reason it's not getting the reviews that Animal Kingdom got was because the sheer fact that, as you said, there's hardly any dialogue and it is set a little bit in the future and it's a little bit odd and a little bit weird.
A bit more niche-y.
Yeah, exactly. Definitely. So therefore, a big challenge for this director who has had great success, but it could, you know, like catch on with the art crowd. So
definitely, and it has gotten a great reviews in Australia. So, yeah.
Awesome. You're on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Brendan, we've run out of time.
We've gone over. Oh, my gosh.
We've gone over. Oh, the news team's going to hate us. So, wonderful show. Thanks for being part of it.
Thank you again, David.
And thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week. You're on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.